Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we're doing a late start to the show this morning because I had to run my son into the SAT, but my brain internal clock was off, and the guys were waiting for me when I turned the studio up this morning, so I thought I had another hour, and actually, I was the one that was late, but I want to welcome Rob Greenlee, my co-host down on the bottom. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Todd. It's great to be here again. And we're a little later than we normally do the show, but that's great. But we've got a great guest who has the same first name. It's going to be tough for you, Todd, to kind of bounce back and forth between two Robs on the show. I think this is the first time.
Yeah, and you guys are you guys getting the video feedback okay on the system? Are you guys actually seeing yourselves?
Yeah, everything looks good to me.
All right. I'm not seeing that. It's switching you guys to your actual in-camera self. I may have to make a change here, but I want to welcome the second Rob. And if I pronounce your name incorrectly, just slam me, Rob. Rob Cristino? Is that how you pronounce that? Or Cristino?
Cristino, yes. And I'm used to being the second Rob from my Survivor days. So it's very much welcome and happy to be here.
And of course, you've got the website. Rob has a website. Rob has a podcast. You've got like three or four domains, yeah?
Yeah, I've got a few different domains, but yeah, Rob has a website is my main website for the appropriately named Rob has a podcast.
Very, very cool. So I guess what I want to do is I'm kind of working through a technical issue here. Rob, I kind of let you, Rob number two, or not Rob number one, I'll let you kind of start off this morning. And I know that you had been wanting to have Rob on the show for a while. This is going to be confusing. but I'll let you start off, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rob, I mean, so how long have you been actually doing your podcast now? Has it been 3 years or 4 years, something like that?
So why don't
you just start off from the beginning and just kind of run through what your experience was and what got you started in this?
Sure thing. My experience really with reality TV was started about almost 10 years ago, or a little more than 10 years ago. I was on Survivor two different times in 2003 and 2004. But I had always been a lover of talk and talk radio, and eventually podcasts as they become more and more popular in the middle of the last decade. And around 2009, I started, I wanted to have a website to have sort of a portfolio for different entertainment projects that I was doing. I had a production company, and I wanted to have a place to promote some of my videos. And so what happened was that I figured out how to do a podcast, and I just sort of just talked to my friends on the podcast. And then because I love talking about TV so much, there was a big season of Survivor, which was a huge all-star season, and I wanted to talk about it. So I started up Rob Has a Podcast in its current form in the beginning of 2010. And, you know, been sort of like just been going and talking about more and more shows as the years have gone by. And it's just been a really crazy adventure that I never anticipated becoming such a huge part of my life.
The technical difficulties are fixed.
Well, thank you, Todd. I appreciate that.
So, you know, Rob, you've, having the had the season on Survivor and then switching over to podcasts, you obviously had this pre-built audience. I'm sure this fan base just, it kind of moved with you, didn't it?
Well, I would say that, yes, I can't say that that has not been part of where I've been able to grow my audience. But, you know, I was also on Survivor a long time ago. I was on Survivor back in 2004 was the last time I played on the show. And now the people that go on the show now, they, you know, sort of like a lot of them just end up just people following them on Twitter and sort of, you know, following them on Facebook just because they're on TV. And that didn't have that. There wasn't even, you know, a MySpace or a Friendster when I was on Survivor. So I've really sort of had to, yes, some people with good memories remember me from Survivor, but I've really had to focus on like a lot of organic growth, not necessarily people, you know, immediately know who I am. And as I mentioned, there's a much more famous Rob from Survivor, Boston Rob, that a lot more people are familiar with. So maybe if I'm lucky, some people think they're following him. And then I'm able to get some social media juice from that.
If you think about that, Rob, lower. Rob won.
Lower Rob.
You know, if you think about it, back in 2004 when this podcasting thing was just kicking off, it's true. None of that stuff that we know and love so much today even existed. So, you know, it's, I can understand, whereas... You know, if you're not a regular mainstream celebrity that's appearing on something every day, how easy it would be. And I hate to say it this, but the 50 minutes of fame was over, so you just had to reconstruct yourself. Yeah,
sure. There's a lot of, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and I think that when I first started up the podcast, I think there were probably a lot of people that were like, "Oh yeah, I kind of remember who that was." But it wasn't like people were following me and, you know, waiting for me to do something. I think that, you know, had I, you know, made a show and the quality was not good, I don't think anybody would, you know, continue to listen to what I was doing. Because a lot of other people from reality TV have tried to do similar things. And for the most part, people, you know, are not that interested. So it is, in some ways, it's an uphill challenge, because I think people say, okay, well, this is just a reality person. And so you're sort of, in some ways, people look at you a little bit differently as sort of not somebody who has anything of substance to say.
So Rob, do you think that there's an opportunity for other reality TV show stars to do similar things to what you're doing, to start a podcast and be successful with it? Or is there kind of a limited window of opportunity for that?
Well, I would hope that not too many of the reality TV people will attempt to try to copy what I've done. But no, I do think that there's something to it. I think that a lot of the reality people, though, go on a show like a Survivor or Big Brother, and they say, okay, I'm going to go on the show and then I'm going to be famous, because and that's really an old, you know, way of thinking of things, because the first people that went on Survivor, they certainly got a lot of notoriety. But I don't think that people, you know, really that's not a very reliable way, I think, to break into whatever field you want to break into. What it is, you know, a good way to do, a good thing to do is you do have more people knowing a little bit of who you are. And then if you had something that's useful to offer, I think you do have more of a way to reach more people because you were on a reality TV show. But I don't think just the thing of being on a reality TV show is something that makes people want to hear what you have to say. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So how do you see you growing your network? I mean, I know that there's some pretty good size podcasting networks that are forming out there to support kind of like after show kind of podcasts. Mm-hmm. So how do you see that market kind of growing here? I mean, it seems like that the combination of social media podcasting with TV content, it seems to be a powerful combination, and you're definitely tapping into that. But kind of as you look out in the future, do you see this kind of becoming a even bigger kind of opportunity as a way to, you know, it's like the Walking Dead and the Talking Dead, that kind of thing, where you have fan kind of conversations about every single show. I mean, is that going to continue to grow, do you think? And what needs to happen to get it to, you know, like maybe a much larger level of success on that side?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Rob. I think that it certainly does feel like it's something that's going to continue to grow. And, you know, there's more and more, you know, second screen is a term that a lot of people talk about, of what are you, you know, saying during the show. And I think that more and more people are interested in talking about a show after the show, although it's just not quite as easy as you would think, because there's a science to it a little bit of, you know, how do you build community and have something that's interesting that's not just sort of just, you know, noise of recapping what happened on the show. So if you're just, you know, anybody could just, you know, talk about what just happened on the show. But I think it does take some skill to sort of say interesting things about what happened during the show. And I think that one of the reasons that reality TV works especially well for this format is there's a lot of, you know, I look at it almost like sports in some way of, you know, here's what happened tonight. Why did this happen? And then where is this going from here? What do we think is going to happen next? So reality TV, I think, is a real natural fit for this sort of thing. But over, you know, the past year, I also started talking about some other shows which are, you know, serialized drama like Breaking Bad and Walking Dead. For a couple of reasons. One, we have a lot of our audience is watching these short sort of shows. And I also, you know, love doing what I do, that I kind of want to have a diverse portfolio where I want to be able to continue to podcast and talk about shows no matter what TV shows are on the air, that, you know, if a show like a Survivor, Big Brother, eventually run their course and go off the air, I'd love to be able to continue to interact with this community that I've built up over the last 4 years.
Rob, I was going to ask you a little bit, you know, the, just so that folks, you know, if they're coming in and they haven't familiar with your show, why don't you just go through your show format and what you do and how often and where and how, and, you know, just the kind of the 411 about the show itself is.
Sure. Rob as a podcast is primarily, our focus is reality TV, talking about, you know, the big shows that we cover are Survivor and Big Brother. And, you know, they sort of run in opposite schedules. So there's always something going on with Rob has a website. So typically what we'll do on a normal week with Survivor is the show airs on Wednesday night. Live an hour after the show ends, I do a post-show recap called Survivor Know-It-Alls, where we sort of, you know, that's sort of like the post-game recap of what happened that night. Who got voted out? Why did they get voted out? What does that mean? Was this a smart decision? And then the other great thing about reality TV and podcasting is that we do exit interviews with the people who get voted off. So I have a very good relationship with CBS. They provide me with get in touch with me with the person who got voted off that day. I do an interview with them. And then I also speak to former players from the game. And then we do a lot of interaction with our audience and get questions from our audience to ask people who were the veterans, sort of went through this, and, you know, all sorts of other content about that. And we do the same sort of thing with Big Brother and Amazing Race. And we've also, you know, covered other reality shows like Whodunit over the summer. And, you know, this, I've applied the same sort of formula to almost any show that we would want to talk about. The, you know, I think what I like to do, though, and really the secret sauce to the podcast, is we mix the strategy talk with sort of, you know, humor and fun. So it is, you know, I think of tough to find the balance. I think some people could just talk about strategy. Some people could just talk about the fun stuff. But I think we do a good job of sort of keeping the balance between the two aspects of the show that I think people are interested in.
Does having the access to, now, I guess the question I want to ask on the access to the folks that get voted off, is that, do you know beforehand and have them scheduled, or do they come on an interview a week later? How, you know, if you can't say it, it's okay, but how does that work?
Yeah, I have a standing call with the CBS publicity on Thursday mornings, and they call me, and I don't know who it's going to be ahead of time. I just know that they're going to call at a certain time, and then whoever is the person who got voted out or eliminated the night before, then I know in the morning that the person from CBS is going to be on the line and say, okay, Rob, we have, you know, so-and-so here for you. Uh-huh. And then I do my interview with them, and then they go off to whatever the next you know, person in the press they need to talk to is.
So that's cool. So you're in their regular call list, and they basically, then it's just a set deal. You get them Thursday morning, you get X amount of time, you know, to talk with them, and then they're off on the next press junket. If it, whether it be whatever show, you know, because I know they're always on multiples of shows after they get voted off.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of a junket, but what's great is that they're talking to a lot of like newspaper reporters and radio shows and stuff like that. But from building up my website and doing a lot of things the right way over the years, my interviews will often be the top search result in Google. So I also get a lot of organic traffic and people coming to my site and listening to my interviews because they're searching for, okay, you know, so-and-so person from Survivor, you know, interview. And then my result will a lot of times be on top or in the top two or three. And so it helps bring in more people to my you know, community, which may not have known about the existence of it beforehand.
You know, Rob, this is some of the things that we, Rob Lohr, this is some of the same formulas that we use for success on the take up of the content from CES. And it's a little different. You know, we do the interviews, we get everything done, get everything packaged. We send the package to the PR people in the company. We're putting it up on our site. They also put it up on their site. So it's that, you know, that if you don't have, one doesn't work without the other. From a volume standpoint. So it's not exactly the same, but it's still kind of that using that leverage. Yeah. It's very, very cool.
There's very few things that I do that are only applicable to reality TV. I mean, if I was, you know, doing a website or a podcast about anything, I would do just pretty much everything the same thing. I mean, there's a couple of advantages of specifically about podcasting about reality TV. And one of those is that the reality stars, the people from the reality shows, tend to be, you know, shameless self-promoters and often are end up in feuds with each other, and that makes for good fodder for podcasting. But for the most part, you could apply the same formula for what I've done over the years with Rob the podcast. So, you know, any topic that you would want to build up a, you know, a podcasting community around.
Well, one thing's for sure is that there will be the feuding will never stop. And I can imagine that, you know, it even probably extends out beyond seasons, don't you? You hear something about somebody and, you know, there's been some, maybe you pick something from TMZ where there was a, you know, a ruckus in a bar or something. So it's got to be, it's just like this, you know, celebrities are just fantastic fodder for ridicule.
Yeah, the podcasting community and the reality TV community are pretty different. I feel like in the podcasting community, everybody is, you know, everybody wants to collaborate with each other and you know, build each other up. And in Survivor and reality TV, there's a lot of like, this person is like me. I gotta take them down. Like, I want to I'm going to talk about how they suck, as opposed to, you know, try to work with them. And it's ironic because on reality TV, you are trained to, you know, build alliances, but there's a lot more of that happens in the podcasting and new media world than in the post reality TV world.
Now, one thing I always like to ask, and I shouldn't ask it this early, maybe I'll save the how you make money part later, but do you do this full time, or is this a, you know, where's your status from JOB to show and everything?
Sure. I have been, you know, doing it as started out as a hobby over the years. And actually, I started up doing this podcast. I had been I founded a production company out here in Los Angeles back in 2006. And our production company had some substantial funding. And then around 2008, when you know, everybody's money started to get very tight, we lost funding in our production company, and I was basically out of work for a bit because we didn't have any funding to do production. So that was really when I started to build up my website and started to play around with podcasting. And that was ultimately when I started to podcast back in 2010. And then, as you know, work started to pick up again, you know, I continued to do it. And as of you know, I was working full time and doing the podcast, you know, 20, 30 hours a week, which was, you know, a very challenging time. I recently have, you know, cut back my hours a little bit of working to, you know, about, you know, 30 hours a week to concentrate more on doing the podcasting. In addition to Rob has a podcast. I also recently I started working on a out of the Rob has a podcast universe. I do a podcast called Time Out with Terrell Owens, which is a an NFL podcast on the Sideshow Network. Where I talk about football every week with T.O. So that was one of the reasons why I needed more time away from my job, and my bosses were not particularly thrilled to have me leave for a couple hours on in the middle of the day to go and talk about football with T.O.
Right. I can imagine that. And of course, and he has probably a pretty set schedule as well, which makes it you probably almost have to go to his schedule, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. So there was, and it's also there's a sweet spot during the week when you want to talk about something like the NFL in a podcast form, because you want to do it as early in the week as possible, so you could talk about what happened over the past weekend without it being too stale, and then also have time to preview the games coming up before it gets to be too late in the week.
Right. Is that then who you're working primarily with for the monetization of your? Of your regular show?
Yeah, I work with the Sideshow Network. They have brought me some advertising sponsors on which I have been very, very generous, and they do a great job on the Sideshow Network, which they distribute Rob as a podcast as well as the Time Out with T.O. podcast. But I've also done, you know, I mentioned my website. I have done, you know, I think a good job of, you know, optimizing my site, and we've done well with AdSense. And the biggest new source of revenue for me has been on YouTube. Over the course of 2013, I was doing my live streaming videos on another website, and at the beginning of the year, I decided I was going to make the switch to do them on Google Hangouts. And over the course of the year, I found that my YouTube numbers are actually starting to exceed my audio podcast numbers, which was very surprising to me. And I think it's because that I have, you know, done a very good job with search and optimizing my content so that I'm getting, you know, even more money than I was doing on AdSense. I'm earning from, you know, the ads on YouTube.
Wow. That's
wow. That's interesting.
It is interesting because you're one of the few that have made that transition and are doing.
I'm not going to retire on this.
Right.
Well, Todd, I think it speaks to his focus in his genre, right? It's the entertainment. It's a lot of younger people on these shows, which tends to be more in line with the YouTube audience, I believe, anyway. So I think he's definitely riding along the popular audience that's watching content on YouTube, you know, with these shows. And Rob, I also wanted to ask you about your relationships I see that you have your primary relationships with CBS, but Breaking Bad kind of takes you off into a new network or relationship. Are you finding that the networks are really becoming more kind of willing to work with shows like yours to cross promote and to feed kind of access, or are you seeing kind of a unique thing with CBS?
Well, there's sort of a two-way street where shows like a reality show like CBS, like I feel like a show like my podcast adds something to the overall experience to that. Of that show, and I feel like we have a very symbiotic relationship where they're happy I'm covering the show, and you know I feel like I'm also you know, of course I'm happy that they get access, and it's a very positive relationship. On a show like Walking Dead or Breaking Bad to cover a show like that, those shows are already established hits, and they could really care less that I'm going to be covering it. And I'm covering it because those shows do well for me. So it's sort of like that's sort of me going where the most eyeballs are of covering shows that are already established hits. So I don't have any sort of relationship with them, and I don't really need any sort of relationship, I feel like, to cover those shows. I mean, if they wanted to someday, you know, give me access and get me on the junkets talking to people from those shows, I'd be thrilled. But it's not something that's really, you know, it's not where my focus is. The other scenario is, you know, I'm finding more and more that shows that are struggling, or maybe a reality show that may not have such a great, you know, overall audience so far, I feel like the networks and PR people for those shows are very willing to work with me because they see me as sort of like a tastemaker and somebody who could potentially start to build up an organic, you know, social media and community around a show that may not be performing so well. And as was the case with a show like Whodunit over the summer, you know, I feel like that we did help, you know, as the show continued to grow over the course of the year with, you know, giving people a place to talk about a show that not a lot of other people were talking about.
Has anyone come to you and actually pitched you to do, did that happen? Did you get pitched to do a show?
No, I haven't. I have not yet, but I think if somebody was like a savvy person in PR at a network and had like a, you know, a reality show that was launching, I think it would be a smart move for them to try to go out and give like additional access to a show like mine, where we have, you know, over 10,000 people who are very social media or engaged on social media. I mean, it couldn't hurt.
Right.
Yeah, the only reason they probably wouldn't is because they would probably think that by doing that, they would be setting themselves up for being asked to pay to have it done. That would be my only.
I'd feel a little weird, you know, to do some sort of like payola as far as the podcasting goes with these shows, unless it was a really horrible show, or if it was a lot of money. That would be the two things.
You know, the thing is, though, if they're going to come and pitch a show, you know, then you run into, or you're just a paid hack. You know, that's what the audience is going to start saying. But if you could figure out how to...
Yeah, it would have to be a show that was, you know, hey, we think this show would appeal to your audience. We want to, you know, give you some special access to the show. Would you be interested in covering it? I think I would certainly be more inclined to talk about a show that I might not normally talk about if a smart, you know, PR person from a network came to me with something like that.
Right.
Hey, one thing too, I noticed here in the podcasting space here with the Breaking Bad TV series is that the Breaking Bad, they were really aggressive about, you know, doing their own official podcasts. So like they would have the creator and the editors, and they'd have the stars from the show on this, you know, the official Breaking Bad podcast. And I found listening to that and then listening to a kind of an outside podcast, I mean, like yours or, you know, I think there was probably three or four other podcasts that were covering Breaking Bad from a fan perspective.
A lot more than that, probably.
Yeah, and I saw this contrast in the shows that was really, really fascinating, is that the official podcast was almost like it really wasn't that good. It was, I mean, it was good because it was like access to the inside of what was going on, you know, with the production, but there was so much inside baseball talk versus what was going on in the fan podcast, which was more, they felt more free to analyze the show and to really speculate, right? Where on the official podcast, they never speculate on anything because they already know.
Yeah, right? They already know. They can't, and they can't even make a. They have to be very careful to not say anything that's going to reveal what next week episode.
That, but you can't be critical on the official podcast of a show. Like, you know, ABC won't put out a podcast of Agents of the Shield. We're like, this was the worst episode yet. What are they doing on this show? Where is this going? So, and that's why I think it's, you know, when you're not officially tied to a network or the official, I think unofficial is probably, you know, where you want to be when it's online and in podcasting, because you're free to sort of, you know, take questions and talk about things. Like if my show for Survivor was officially on CBS.com, or if I was hosting some sort of podcast on CBS.com, I couldn't do the same show that I'm able to do not being under the umbrella of CBS.
Yeah, I understand. You know, you talk about your basically your time. You're taking about 30 hours a week. I fully understand that. The commitment, the time commitment. Now, one thing I've done, and I've been doing this now officially, my other show officially 9 years, I have my 900th episode this coming Monday.
Congratulations.
It's a big number, but thousands will be even bigger. But, you know, to think about, you know, to keep my sanity and to have stayed able to do the show continuously, I've really had to make sure that I control my time to make sure that I can still stay viable, that the audience doesn't get bored, that I'm not driving my wife crazy. So for myself, I've tried to limit my production, AKA this show and the two other shows, to, which is 3 episodes a week, to about 15 hours is my goal. Is not to put any more time. Now, obviously, I have a whole bunch of other responsibilities when it comes to Raw Voice and the stuff that we do there. But from a just purely from a show sanity standpoint, that's the time I'm putting into it. It's paying the bills. I can't complain. So it's worthy of the time to put in. So is the time factor, you know, you said you had to take some more time off work, which ends up meaning less dollars coming in. So, you know, you've got, obviously, it, to me, the end goal for you is this thing's got to generate more revenue. So you're investing in yourself at this point. So really the risk is on you. But, you know, how's that? I don't know if you're married, but how does that go over at the homestead?
Well, not only am I married, my wife and I, we just had our first baby. It'll be 3 weeks ago tomorrow. So it definitely is.
Let me see here. Let's zoom in. Are you sleeping?
That's right. You have dark circles under your eyes, right?
More than usual, I think. So it is a very crazy time. And, you know, the financials of everything that I do is a big factor. But I do love what I get to do. And I always feel like I'm very, very lucky to have the opportunities that I do. And while I would say that podcasting is not making me a rich person at this point in time, I do feel like it's an investment, and I feel like it's a smarter use of my time, even though the short-term benefits for right now are not paying the same amount as if I was to sell my time to somebody else. I do think of it as a bit of an annuity where, you know, I am going to, you know, put the time in now. And I feel like, you know, down the road, you know, my time, I will be, you know, compensated for my time down the road. And even if it doesn't work out, I still had a great time along the way. I don't want to, I think that's probably a good way to go through life. You know, I think I'd rather, you know, spend the time doing the things that I'm passionate about. Even if they are not directly leading to financial compensation. But I do, in my heart, believe that if you do the things that you are passionate about for long enough, there will be financial compensation. It'll work itself out.
Well, congratulations on on being a new mom and dad. That's big. Yeah. I will be honest with you. I have 4. My oldest is now approaching 10. Youngest is approaching 10, and I have daughter's 24. I am so glad for at least this phase of my life to be out of the diaper business.
Yes.
I'm sure at some point, you know, as the kids get older, that cycle will start again. But I am very happy at this point to be out of that business. It's fun and aggravating at the same time to have teenagers. But
yeah, Todd, I'm in the same boat. I have a 24-year-old and a 26-year-old, so I'm way past the diaper age.
Well, you're soon going to be in the grandpa age there, Rob.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Oh, we're dating ourselves badly here. So the obviously then the doing the show, you know, Thursday mornings, you got to be on the call for CBS but really that's only, what, 16 weeks or something a year, right? Or how many seasons a year? I don't even know.
There's two Survivor seasons, and then there's a Big Brother season in the middle. So basically it's like from February to May is Survivor, and then Big Brother started up in June this year and went right through. Like I'm in the midst of a run of, from June basically to Christmas is, you know, so Big Brother went for like 12 weeks or whatever, then went right into Survivor. So
right.
There's very little downtime in the, you know, covering the shows that I cover.
And then of course there's always the, you know, your show is dependent upon these shows. So you're thinking, okay, how much of a run does Survivor have? Are they going to get renewed again? So there's all that uncertainty. So
yeah, there is some uncertainty with those shows, but, you know, God willing, the shows have continued to, yeah. You know, all of TV has, you know, network TV continues to drop, but, you know, Survivor and Big Brother have, you know, maintained their ratings. And the great thing about those shows is that they're so cheap for the networks to make compared to the serialized shows. So from a dollars and cents perspective, you know, CBS has a lot of reasons to keep those franchises going.
One thing that, an initiative that I've been working on for a very long time here in Hawaii, and largely it's a challenge because just everything is so ridiculously expensive in Hawaii, and finding a location is the biggest challenge. You know, one thing that we'd always thought was doing some stuff here in Hawaii that's, you know, Hawaii-centric. And we have such a huge Japanese and Chinese tourist base that, you know, they have all these crazy, I don't know if you've watched much Japanese TV, but they have all these crazy shows in Japan and game shows and this kind of stuff. And we always thought it'd be kind of cool to bring some of that type of stuff to Hawaii as incentives for people that are coming, and give awards and all this stuff for, you know, people doing stuff while they're on vacation. And it ties into, you know, there's some of the same functions there. You know, you're relying upon the networks continuing to put the shows out. We're relying on finding a location to do stuff. There's so many pieces that have to go to make a show good, but ultimately you're probably always looking forward to see what you're going to find next, aren't you?
Yeah. I feel like there are a lot of people that are in the TV recap. I don't know, industry game, let's say. And it seems like they don't like the shows that they're talking about. And, you know, I always find, you know, the shows are, if I ever disliked a show that I was talking about, I would probably stop doing it. I think part of the fun for me is coming up with, you know, things that I wanted to talk about that are interesting in all of these shows that we get to talk about. And we're lucky enough to have people who want to listen to us talk about them.
Right. Rob?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, you know, Survivor has been on the air for a long time, and I got a chance to meet Jeff Probst back in 2005 on a podcast that my wife and I did. Yeah, she was actually the first CBS TV network podcaster back in 2005. And so have you had Jeff Probst on your show at all, ever?
Yeah, we had Jeff Probst back in last fall, about a year ago around this time, we had him on the show. And one of the things that we did, which, you know, we have such a great community that we've built up with, Rob has a podcast. Jeff Probst had he did a talk show called the Jeff Probst Show, which yep. premiered last fall. And so I had said at the time of last summer, I said, you know what? I bet it would be a good thing for Jeff Probst. a smart thing for his PR team to come on Rob as a Podcast to talk to the audience of Rob as a Podcast about his his upcoming show. So and I think what we should do is we should let Jeff Probst know that we want him to come on, and please use the hashtag RHAP supports Jeff. And we should do this, you know, right away. And so Jeff Probst was really bombarded with tweets. they kind of annoyed him. But eventually he sort of like, all right, fine. I'll come on the show. I give up. So that was how we got Jeff Probst to come on to the show. And you know, the community is really, really great. And, you know, just like with the podcast awards last year, you know, when we are able to, you know, give this, you know, very excited community a goal, a lot of times they can, you know, follow through and are excited to, you know, be even more engaged with the show.
Yeah, he's a really great guy. I mean, I was really impressed by him. He's so genuine.
Yeah. Jeff is really one of the really, you know, really fun guys. You know, I think sometimes being with the survivors for 39 days could take its toll on him, but I think that for the most part when he's back here in the US, I think he's very happy and generally in a good mood.
So, you know, I'm having been on the show, having you been on Survivor before, and this is not related to, well, it's related to your show. For those 39 days, you know, is everything as it seems, or, you know, is there water being brought in separately and food, or is it truly you're really roughing it? How, you know, there's
yeah, that's no that if Survivor was, you know, a sham, you know, it would have been exposed, especially with all these reality stars. They wouldn't be able to wait to come home and give the National Enquirer it was fake. We didn't really have to do anything. Yeah, so you're really out there. You're really, like, looking for water and food and all sorts of stuff. And so, you know, you need to be resourceful and work hard. And it's good training for podcasting.
And I tell you, probably have this love-hate relationship with the film crew, because you know they've been back at the shack having, you know, getting taken care of.
You signed up for this. It's not like you were, you know, dragged out of your house and brought there. It's like you're, for them, at least for me, I always consider myself very lucky to be there. And I didn't have any animosity towards my, you know, it wasn't like even like a Stockholm syndrome. I did not resent the production team that was making this possible for me to be on TV and, you know, and not have to go to work for 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would imagine at the same time, they do have medical staff there that if there is a need, they will jump in. Right.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That happens, you know, quite a bit on Survivor, where somebody has to get pulled out of the game for medical reasons, where somebody is unable to continue. Like the show, you know, really takes this stuff very seriously. And you know, there's never been any serious injury on the U.S. Survivor. Actually, on a French version of Survivor in this past year, somebody had a heart condition, and like a young guy died on the first day. Now, which is, you know, very sad story. So the U.S. Survivor has really even, like, gone to more protective measures to make sure everybody's, you know, sort of in tip-top shape that's going to compete on the show.
The show where they're running around naked. I just don't quite get that one.
Right. Yeah. I thought about covering that in summer. The thing is, there's not really a game there, and I feel like the sweet spot for my podcast is sort of strategic talk about shows that, like, where there's a winner and a loser. That's why we don't really cover too much dating shows or talent shows on reality TV. So there's not really a game. There's not really a prize. So it was interesting to see there are some of the same elements as on Survivor. But yeah, that's just really for, you know, thrill seekers and daredevils.
You know, locally here, Ryan Ozawa was when Lost was running, he had by far the most popular Lost podcast. And it was him and his wife that did the show. And he almost looked forward to the show ending because it was taking such a toll. Because it came, by the time it came on, by the time they did their, just like you, right afterwards, they went right in. And we're here in Hawaii. So the time difference and everything else. And man, oh man. You know, he's like, I'm going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and this is killing me. I got to be at the office the next morning. So he was actually kind of relieved when the season was over. So you probably have some pretty late nights on show nights too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, back in the spring, I had some late nights where Thursday is my busiest night of the week. I bet I'd say it takes me about, my big Survivor podcast that I do on Thursdays takes about like 7 or 8 hours from the time that I start, you know, I push record to when the show finally gets posted. And I was also covering Big Brother Canada at the time, which was, you know, the Canadian version of Big Brother, which, you know, the international versions of these shows is another, you know, new frontier that we've started to explore. So I was covering Big Brother Canada on Thursdays. And then I was also writing, I'd been asked to write a blog about Big Brother Canada for the Huffington Post Canada. So those were some nights where, you know, I was going to bed like probably like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, to work on those shows, and I'd like falling asleep at the keyboard trying to write a blog. So that was one period of time I was happy when that crazy period was over. But for the most part, I would, you know, I feel very lucky to be able to do what I do. And I don't long for the day when this is all over.
So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was just wondering, do you have to make your content like right after the show to get the most kind of viewership? Yeah. Or can you, you know, push it off a day or so? Is there a big drop off in interest?
Unlike what, you know, a lot of other, you know, podcasters, you know, they do a lot of content that's evergreen. But I do feel like covering the types of shows that I do, there is a bit of a half-life to these podcasts where, you know, they are most impactful right after the show ends, the day after the show airs. And then the longer you wait, you know, the less popular these shows are going to be. So that's, you know, the great thing about doing, you know, these shows live on a Google Hangout right after the show ends. I'm able to get the most bang for my buck. With all of the you know, post show recaps that I'm able to do.
Yeah, it makes sense. And plus two, I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, you know. So it's you know, if you've just watched something and you go, you know, you've taken some notes or something, and you're probably, you know, you're probably more inclined to have a better show. So is your process then while watching the show, is it you're fiercely scribbling stuff down, or how's that prep work for you?
Yeah, I take a lot of notes. I always have a notebook in front of me when I watch those. It's, you know, the challenge for me is staying awake when it's a show that I'm not podcasting about. Like, I'm very much like focused on a show, and then, you know, I'll watch like a Boardwalk Empire or a show that I'm not doing a podcast about it. You know, I'm asleep halfway through. So they say that the best way to sort of learn something is, like, if you have to teach it to somebody else. Your brain sort of like remembers things, you know, a different way if you have to share this information that you're learning. So it does sort of increase my, you know, comprehension of what's going on, because I have to be able to verbalize my opinion about it in a very short time after.
Well, I think the Skype connection just went south because the audio was it had great full screen with both of you guys, and then just all of a sudden Skype quality went way bad. Hopefully it'll resolve itself here in a second. You know, Rob, one thing, you know, that, you know, living in L.A. or do you live in San Francisco? I assume L.A.?
Yeah, I'm in the L.A. area.
Okay. So, you know, did you make it out to the Pod Festival? Did you make it out to L.A. Pod Fest?
No, you know, I didn't. I wanted to, but my son was born the 29th. So it was the timing really was not great. I'm very excited for New Media Expo to get back out there. But yeah, the timing just was not great for me for PodFest.
What's your thought process right now on where the podcasting space as a whole is? What are you seeing from a listener base? I know you're growing this great presence on YouTube, but what do you think is happening to your podcast audience?
It's interesting. I feel like there's more and more podcasts are coming. I'm definitely seeing some growth on the podcast front, but I just feel like it doesn't seem to be, growing as fast as the YouTube front, where I've had, this huge expansion in on the YouTube side of things. I'd say that from year to year, my podcast audio audience, has certainly not grown with my overall, YouTube audience. So I think it's interesting. And I wonder if that sort of like the iTunes system is sort of, inefficient or, is just not working the same way that YouTube is able to for people to comment on stuff. And, I think that there's certainly seems to be like a lot of room for improvement, I think, in the overall podcast, distribution ecosystem.
When you're doing your Google Hangout, then how many people are on that with you? Do you have 3-4 people or?
Oh, I try to keep it to like 3 on a maximum. I feel like for the most part, I like to have a co-host with me specific to each show, which is sort of like an expert, which frees me up to not have to be the guy who remembers everything. And then we will often have like a veteran of the specific show that we're talking to on there as well. So I'm able to sort of not have to have everything sort of top of mind. I sort of lean on my expert in the field of the things that I'm talking about.
Very cool.
So, Rob, what part of podcasting do you think really needs to change? I mean, do we need to see more of a, an audience connection with the on-demand show in podcasting? Or is it just the fact that audio just in general is starting to lose its luster versus video?
I don't know. I feel like there's not an easy, way for people to be able to get their podcasts. And like, I know that there's the iTunes app is, they continue to improve it, but I still feel like that's not great. I feel like the way that iTunes ranks the podcasts, I also feel like always just seems a little off to me in terms of whatever their, rating algorithm is. And I feel like it just seems like there should be a better way to be able to, I don't know what the right exchange would be to be able to have podcasts become more universally accessible. But I just feel like that seems like the area where there's the most room for growth.
So do you think that there's any one kind of new platform or relatively new platform that is starting to get it right? Or do you have any observation on that?
No, I don't. I mean, I hope that maybe if you guys have some suggestions for me, that would be interesting. Like even like something like SoundCloud, which I don't use nearly as much as I'd like to. Like I kind of like, what they, where you're able to sort of like, by episode more than just by channel, sort of like, embed a thing from there and sort of, give like thumbs up and like individual shows from a podcast as opposed to, iTunes, which is very channel specific as opposed to episode specific.
Yeah. And what else? It's kind of weird because we're watching, we get a pretty good insight into, how things are being consumed. And by far, iOS is still king, when it comes to whether it be the via the iPhone, iPad, or through the app, or through in through iTunes. You know, they still it's the majority, but you know, I think we're tracking 150 some devices that can access content today. So I think the difficulty in podcasting has way been removed because people are just clicking on stuff now and playing. So the work that you're doing on SEO and making sure that you're found in Google is, you know, I preach this for a long time and podcasters still don't get it, but I get a huge amount of traffic from Google too, because, you know, my site not only has podcast content, it's got blogging content that brings people to the website as well, and one leads to the other. So so I understand your process there, but you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to take to, you know, the numbers are not going down. No. We continue to see audiences grow. You know, my experience on YouTube, we're doing it live, is that quite frankly, it's cheap. It saves me, you know, it's pretty much commercial free. It works. I could get the embed and put it on the website, and I'm not paying someone $400 a month to do that, you know? So for me, it's an end of the means, plus the content gets up on YouTube. But, you know, typically this show runs an hour and a half. My other show runs an hour and 15. Who wants to watch that long of a show on YouTube? Generally, they won't. How long is your show typically? Are you 30, 45 minutes?
No, I'll do like an hour.
Really?
And I know not everybody sticks around and watches the show, and maybe they're not staring at the screen the
right
whole time. But, you know, I don't have too many complaints from people to do a shorter show. I do have started doing a recap on YouTube of Survivor, which I call the least you need to know about Survivor, which is sort of like a 4-minute episode. And I say, you know, I know you're busy if you don't have time to listen to all of our shows. And if this sort of like whet your appetite, we have, you know, the long form of this, if you'd like to check that out. But, you know, I think that there is something interesting between, you know, a show like this show on YouTube. If I'm watching it on YouTube, I can go to the comments and I can leave comment specific feedback about this episode. Rob says, was the worst guest you guys ever had on here. I thought this is I love you guys, but this was whatever.
Right.
Or hey, this was great, you know, and I could leave you specific feedback about this episode. Whereas opposed to like in the iTunes model, I really can only leave feedback about the channel. Like, hey, this show is great.
Right.
I love it. I listen to it every week. And, you know, there may be episodes of things that sort of rise to the top. And I know that there are episode charts on iTunes, which rank that. But it just feels like YouTube is able to do a better job of picking out what are the hit episodes and sort of like, you know, direct traffic to those and show, oh, you like this, so you may also like this, or, you know, I could, you know, be watching this and subscribe, you know, in an annotation. It just seems like there's, and again, that might just be the difference between video and audio, but I feel like there should be a better system, I feel like, in 2013 than what we have to be able to find new podcasts to listen to.
You know, I think my thought has always been, and I guess I need to rethink this a little bit, is I've always said, come to my website and make a comment. I don't really care if they, you know, for me, that's always been, but I, you know, honestly, if they're listening on their mobile device, you know, do they have time to make, if they can probably make a comment, if they can make a comment on the mobile device, they may be more inclined than, oh yeah, I need to go to Todd's website later or Rob's website later and make a comment. You know, one thing I've noticed is that I used to have I had a telephone number that they could dial in and leave a comment. And I would have two or three calls on every episode. And recently that number has just, you know, basically I'm getting like maybe one a month. So that's, the audience hasn't changed, but no one's dialing to make a comment anymore. So what's changed? Something's changed, and I haven't made them quite figured out. So I'm going to retire that number. That number's, you know, we're going to remove it and we're going to go on and do something else. So, you know,
well, Todd, I think a lot of it is, people just aren't using phones that much anymore.
Yeah, they
I think that there's a lot more texting and a lot more IMing and things like that going on. And people just aren't using their phones very much. I know I don't use my phone very often.
So maybe I need to set up one of those text numbers where you text 1257 and, you know, text me your comments. Maybe that's what I need to set. I don't know. You know, there's definitely got to be. I understand where Rob's coming from on the interaction part.
Well, yeah, and I think if you look at, you know, what's going on with Twitter, I think Twitter may be your best format for getting comments back on the show. So, I mean, yeah. That's you know, Rob, are you seeing the same thing?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like my audience has grown, you know, quite a bit over the last 4 years. But I kind of feel like I felt like more people were listening to the show a couple years ago because of the feedback that I would get from the show. Like, post an episode, and then almost it's seemingly like almost everybody that would listen would write to me and comment on sort of the jokes and sort of. And I wonder if having a bigger audience, I feel at times like I'm more out of touch with the audience. Whereas when I had a smaller audience, I felt like there was a lot more direct one-to-one communication that was going on. So it's a challenge as, you know, a show continues to grow. How do you keep the people feeling like they should be continuing to write to you because you are seeing, and I read everything that comes in, but it's very hard for me to respond to all of the comments that we end up getting on the show. And I feel like because of that, people are less likely to comment sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. I get that. Really, I really do.
Yeah, as you get, you know, busier, you're doing more shows, it's hard to take the time out to have that conversation with your fan base, which is probably what built your success to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a real double-edged sword.
You know, I run contests from time to time, and hey, run the contest is fine, and I get the prizes, and we pick a winner, and then 2 weeks later, did I mail that prize out? And you know, and then I'll get that Monday, and then the next week, oh my God, I haven't sent that guy his prize. So what I did is I've got the point where I just asked my audience, I said, I need someone to basically manage the contest. I, you know, hold the contest. I give you the information and, you know, go forth and order it and get it shipped out. And so I've got a, you know, person now that I'm bringing on that is going to help me with that portion so that I can, you know, even just so that the execution is, you know, A through Z, we get all steps in, make sure that the people get what they're supposed to get when they're supposed to get on a timely manner. Because you know, nothing more is going to piss someone off if you have a contest and then 6 weeks later, where's this thing he was given out? That was a scam. You know, that is not good. So I know that was a weakness on my part that I had to fix on my show. So I basically asked the fan base to help me out, you know, and, like have someone step up that's going to do that. I think the interaction with the audience is critical. And I miss sometimes the having people call on the show because they would, you know, either chastise me or make a positive comment. And then that would it's just this snowball effect. So I don't know. I don't get as much interaction on Twitter. I get mostly my stuff on email.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find?
You know, I get a lot on Twitter also, but I find the problem with Twitter is, you know, if I'm not at the computer and responding to it right away, there's no way to, like, if somebody emails you, you can go back, okay, let me go with my filter and sort of like, okay, let me hear all the emails that came in through the website, let me answer them all now. But if you let an hour go by and you'll never get that comment back that somebody wrote to you on Twitter.
Right.
And
then how do you, you know, you need to put that in some bin somewhere so that if you want to mention it on the show later and not forget, you know, so you got to have, you know, I don't know if you read listener email or not on the show, but, you know, that's one thing I've always tried to do is not miss an email. And when I do, I kind of like scramble, go looking for it because I thought it was in a folder and it wasn't.
I'm very lucky that I have a very a large group of when we first started this, we called it the Rob as a Podcast interns, and they were doing such a good job. I promoted them to staffers. So the Rob as a Podcast staffers, they do a really good job of, you know, they do a lot of my research for me and put together a lot of the stuff for me to talk about.
That's cool.
On the show.
Those are fantastic type of fans.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's what we're talking about here is a real opportunity for Twitter. And I know that Twitter wants to get more involved in the TV business, right? Rob, do you have a sense of what that might look like? I mean, as Twitter kind of moves towards being kind of a TV distribution platform or in a conversation platform, do you see that, you know, helping your podcast be more successful? I mean, so have you thought about trying to reach out to Twitter and making some contact with them to maybe work with them a little closer at a deeper level with shows?
No, you know, I've never tried to reach out directly to anybody at Twitter, but I do feel like the more that Twitter and TV becomes married, I feel like that helps my overall plan for what I'm trying to do, because I feel like I live tweet, in addition to podcasts, many of the shows that I cover. So, you know, I try to, you know, it's a fine line because I'm trying not to spoil the show, but I'm trying to make a joke that is people will retweet and favorite that will not ruin the outcome for somebody who's on the West Coast and hasn't seen the show. And to which I say they probably shouldn't be on Twitter at that time, but they will certainly make no hesitation to complain that you spoiled the show for them. So the more and more I think that, you know, TV and Twitter and any other, you know, social media becomes married, I think that's a advantage for what I'm trying to do.
So do you see yourself moving towards any kind of second screen kind of experience with the shows that you cover, like maybe trying to get involved in contributing content while the show is actually airing? Or is there any play in that side?
You know, I don't know yet. I think it's really the wild, wild west with the whole second screen. And I feel like, I don't know if I would want to, if I was watching a show that I was interested in, do I want to be watching something else at the same time I'm watching that show? So most of my stuff is post show. And you know, it's an evolution.
Interesting.
Yeah, it seems like that there's definitely a movement more towards trying to have content on a second screen, because the research is showing that people have their tablets and their laptops, you know, right in front of them while they're watching TV, and they're bouncing back and forth, you know, with their attention between their tablet and the show. But I totally agree with you. I mean, Rob, that do you really want to distract yourself from watching a show that's really good? I mean, or are people doing that on shows that aren't as good?
I find it light attention. You know, it's if I'm watching a show, what am I doing? Okay, so most of us are DVRing anyway. So we're fast forwarding through the stuff, and then we're picking it back up. But the stuff that I do watch live, what I find is that as soon as the commercial comes on, my head goes into my notebook and I'm making a comment, or I'm on Facebook, or I'm on Google Plus or something. And when the show comes back on, I'm kind of back in with the show. You know, I think every person's different, but.
Yeah. I feel like maybe if there was some sort of better way to cultivate top tweets and stuff and things that are like, I know that there is, you could take a look at what are the most popular tweets, but they may not necessarily be the best tweets. If there was some way to sort of like, somebody was sort of cultivating, here are the you know, the funniest or most interesting tweet about this specific show, and you could sort of look at them on a second screen. But I don't think I'd want to watch a second show at the same time as the show I'm currently enjoying.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to imply that's what you should do. It was more like just be commenting, you know, like on Twitter or something like that about what's happening in the live show, right?
No, it's a good point. Like, is it a Vine during every commercial that, you know, that people could be watching? You know, I don't know. It's really, you know, 2 years ago, I had no idea I'd be doing, you know, live shows on YouTube right after the fact. So it really is an evolution. And I feel like, you know, because of shows like what you guys do, I feel like I'm always trying to, you know, get an advantage on what are the emerging technologies and what are the best practices to be doing. And that's what makes, you know, fun. Besides just talking about reality TV, I love podcasting and new media, and it's a fun journey to be on with everybody.
You know, I think that for me is, I'm having as much fun with my gadgets as I do with the show. You know, when I started doing the video part, to me, it was more about, you know, improving the process and having fun and taking the show to the next level. When you're doing Hangouts, how's your quality and, you know, how's that worked out from a production standpoint and your editing? Because, you know, there's not too much editing you can do. It's once it's done, right?
Yeah, that had been one of the biggest challenges for me with editing, and why I was so hesitant to get into video. I didn't want to edit, because from working in production, like, I know how long post-production can last. And that's why I kind of feel like to do live video, it takes a lot of the work out of that. You know, it would never get done. So I do like doing it live, but it also presents some challenges. There's no going back and like, okay, let's take that part again and let me try that one more time. So it's a challenge, but it's sort of like, you know, walking a tighter. It's very fun also.
Speaking of challenges, Skype is once again chopping on us. Rob, I think we've about beat this with a dead horse, don't you? You got any other thoughts?
Yeah, I just think you know, the type of shows, Rob, that you're doing is really, really fascinating, and you're kind of at the cutting edge of what's happening, I think, with TV and podcasting and kind of kind of playing in this area. And I think you know, a lot of what you're doing is gonna help shape what this kind of social media / podcasting / TV world kind of looks like here. And I think, you know, I wish you the most luck in what you're doing, and I'll do my best to keep promoting your shows.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And I really appreciate you guys having me on, and this is a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in January.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And that's, you know, believe it or not, that's from a calendar perspective, it's just right around the corner. And I look forward to seeing you out at the show as well, Rob. And I be honest with you, normally I get a sneak peek at the databases on the podcast awards, and I kind of know who's in the running. I haven't even, we handed the databases off to the reviewers. I haven't even took a sneak peek, so I can't even give you a hint on how you did from a nomination standpoint.
It's a very tricky thing, the podcast awards, because it's like, you know, I don't want to burn everybody out on the nominations to sort of like remind people, you know, you don't want to harass your audience at the same time, but you do need to get them to, you know, come out and support you.
Yeah. Believe me, I fully understand that. We're running a crowdfunding thing right now for our CES coverage. And, you know, so I have the sponsor, have my insiders, which are basically folks that donate to the show. And now I'm asking them a third time to pull out their wallets and support another thing. And I'm thinking, my God, this guy's asking me for all my money. You know, I better be dancing on chairs or something in order to keep them entertained and give them enough value to do that. So I think that's what it all boils down to the end. The listeners support you as long as you continue to deliver them great content. And I think they're happy to do that, especially the folks that maybe not be able to help you. I don't know if you asked for donations or not on your show, but if you know, if you do, you know, there's some people that come, some that can't, and those that can't may be more inclined to help you out in these, you know, these non-tangible events where you're basically not asking them for money, but for a, you know, go nominate or go vote. So I one way or the other, I think the audiences are happy to do it.
The audience of Robin's podcast has always been very generous with, you know, their time and their resources, and, you know, really, we could not have gotten this far without the help of a very awesome audience.
Rob?
So, Rob, So what's your session at the New Media Expo here in January?
Sure.
Can you share some of that?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about tips for building a successful fan podcast. I think it's very important to be doing, you know, to have community in all the things that you want to do. And I'll be speaking with Daryl from Golden Spiral Media and Jason from the Walking Dead cast. And I believe Stephanie Ravenscraft, I believe, is also on the panel as well. So we're going to have a good group to talk about building a community around your fan based podcast.
I don't know what happened there, but did you guys see the screen blink?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, cool.
I think USB had a mind of its own. That was very, very odd, and we may actually be off the air from a stream standpoint. Stream is still running.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, that was weird. Okay.
Live podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Stuff happens.
So, and it's been good to see you guys out at New Media Expo, and sounds like a great panel, Rob. So we look forward to being out there with you guys. Rob, who do we have on tap? What's the game plan?
Oh, as far as next week.
Yeah.
And we have Francesco Bashiri, who is the founder of Spreaker, who did the big deal with the iHeartRadio folks to get podcasting on Clear Channel.
Oh, this could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're actually a podcast hosting and creation platform.
Yeah, this could be very, very interesting. You'll have to refrain me.
And then the week after that, November 2nd, we have Callie Lewis on from GeekBeak TV.
Great.
Ooh.
And then on November 9th, we have Stephen Beecham, who's a podcast producer for CNET TV.
Oh, that sounds like a great lineup. Can't wait to have Callie on. That'll be fun. And yep. She's a busy gal. I'm glad you're able to get her on the schedule.
Oh, yeah.
So lots of great network folks. Got some folks that are on the content creation side. So I'm sure we're going to have a lot of people watching or listening. And those of you that are, if you have comments about today's show, you can reach Rob or I here at Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And Rob number two, Rob, where can they best reach you at?
You can go to my website, robhaswebsite.com, or on Twitter, I'm at Rob. If you can't spell that, you could just click that little Twitter icon on robhaswebsite.com.
Yeah, I would probably type that. I think I typed it three times to get it right on the lower third today.
That's why I have to have robhaswebsite.com, because I can't count on people remembering how to spell my last name.
Well, I appreciate everyone for being here today and taking time out of their schedule. And Rob, thanks. And you guys, thanks for being patient with me at the top of the hour here when I was scrambling to be ready to go. And everything seems to have worked out. And it looks like we've got one here that's going to make the can, which I guess for a better word is make the recording without being spoiled, which is good. Any final comments, Rob?
No, I think it's great. Like I said before, I really appreciate you, Rob, for coming on and talking to us today.
Yeah, I do too. Yep. Appreciate it.
Thank you, both. And for not only for having me and everything that you guys do, in space, it's really great, to be able to know that, there are guys like you who are, helping to build up this podcasting field and make it possible for me to be able to have a lot of fun doing nonsense all week long.
You know what, Rob, though, on the other hand too, as we're talking today, I'm writing notes. I every time a guest comes on and talking to you guys, all of you guys are really leading in this space. You're really doing good stuff, and I just continue to push the boundaries out there, because it really makes the rest of us sit back and admire what you're able to accomplish. I think that has to be acknowledged, and and the methods and everything else that you go through to do that. And I'm as appreciative as that as anything. So it was my pleasure to talk with you and find out how you do your show and a little bit about on how the monetization is working and your whole process. And I think if folks watch this show enough, you know, we should have a lot of very good educated podcasters that come out of this that can make good decisions. So thanks for adding to the discussion here.
Yeah, no problem. Fun to do it.
All right, everyone. We'll be back here next Saturday at our normal time at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. And then the following on Sunday, the 27th, we'll have the slate announcement, the Podcast Award slate announcement at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So that'll be great to announce everyone that was actually made the slate for the Podcast Awards. Then voting will start shortly thereafter. If you're so inclined, I've got a Kickstarter going on at geeknewscentral.com along with the other TPN members. We just got it started, but we're trying to raise a little additional money beyond the sponsors to pay for some additional expenses for CES. So consider that if you would. I would definitely appreciate it. Rob, thank you for your time. Thanks for coming out. Rob Greenlee, appreciate you. Oh. Just getting all the scheduling done for me, or for us, I should say. Apologize there.
It's always fun. It's always fun to speak to great, great people doing great things. So,
all right, everyone else, until next time, everyone, take care and we'll see you. Aloha.